This episode is sponsored by Cricut. Now, if you follow me on social media, you will have seen that to get me off my phone in the evenings, I've started crafting and I love it. What has totally changed the game for me is getting a Cricut machine, which is technically a smart cutting machine. But what it really is creating stickers for the girls, personalizing everything in sight, and even making my own birthday cards. There is so much you can do. Now, let's be clear. I am not a natural crafter, but Cricut has a free design space app which has thousands of ready-to-make projects and tens of thousands of images with step-by-step instructions. The other day, my eldest wanted to put her favorite animal, which is a tiger, on the front of her notebook. So we just searched for an image she loved, created a vinyl sticker on the Cricut, and done. Cricut are running a big sales event until the 10th of April. So now is the time to get one. Just go to cricut.com. That's C-R-I-C-U-T.com.
Tell me about some of those language shifts, because I think, you know, when I experienced those miscarriages, even that word miscarriage felt like it was blaming me somehow, that I had missed something. And I'm wondering, what are some of the other language things that you struggle with, and how do we move this on so that this language isn't a barrier to women shaming themselves even more when they're going through something as hard as, you know, miscarriage or loss or infertility?
Again, I can really relate to that, because on my discharge paperwork after I had my twins, it said late miscarriage. So I had my twins at 21 weeks on a labour ward. I went through a labour. I gave birth to them both vaginally. I had to deliver the placenta. It was literally the same as other labours, and it was called a late miscarriage. And I found it so hugely offensive because A, I didn't feel like it was a miscarriage, but also B, it implied that I was late. So I couldn't even be on time to my own son's death. And it just felt like a real punch that that's what it was labelled. And so I would never, ever use that terminology. I find it so offensive. So for me, I'd prefer second trimester loss, because I feel that's more reflective of my experience, or perhaps early premature birth, just to highlight that it was very early. But there's loads of things that we use in obstetrics which are just plain offensive. So failed induction, failure to progress, incompetent cervix. I mean, we know medicine and obstetrics is very patriarchal. Men were doctors, weren't they? And so that's where it's all come from. And it's just a complete lack of insight. And I write about this in my book, but you would never say that a man had an incompetent penis if he had erectile dysfunction. But you would say that a woman had incompetent cervix rather than cervical dysfunction. So the blame language just lies all with the women.
Even little ones that it's only when you think about them, like waters breaking. It's like, they're not breaking, they're doing what they're meant to do, they're releasing. And I think when you get into this language, you realise it is everywhere, isn't it? What are some of the things that, you know, you do talk about this in the book, what are some of the things that women and your community have told you really don't work for them in the language anymore? Are there common threads that you hear?
So I think the notion about failure, no one wants to be called a failure, do they? I mean, why on earth are we still using that language nowadays? Like I said, failed induction, failure to progress, was just unacceptable. There's definitely been a change in some language. So I hear a lot of women calling themselves geriatric, whereas actually in practice, I never see any practitioners saying that. So we would say advanced maternal age, whereas I see a lot of women calling themselves that. Like, is this a geriatric pregnancy? And actually, I find that quite jarring. And so that's because historically it would have been referred to as geriatric pregnancy. And that language still hangs around, despite in practice, actually medical people I don't see using that, which I'm really reassured, like that makes me happy. But I feel that women are so used to having that blame-filled language that they've absorbed that. And so they're referring to themselves as geriatric, which is an awful way to refer to yourself, especially when you're really not geriatric when you're 35 or 40, are you? It's not geriatric at all.
Yeah, it's so true. I don't know what you think about this, but I notice how casually, you mentioned it earlier when you were talking about the twins, you know, late. She was 3 days late. And I was thinking, isn't that interesting? How can someone be late to their own birth? Like, surely they are right on time. Even this language that is so normalized, oh, I was 2 days late, I was 2 weeks late, I was this early. What do you think about the language that isn't medicalized as much, that's just so in our lexicon, but I still think is just this very subtle, you're not doing it right messaging?
Yeah, that's so interesting. It's so funny because we know that less than 5% of babies come on their due date. So we know that very few babies are going to come on that day anyway. And yeah, it is funny that we divide it into early and late, whereas we know it's a spectrum, isn't it? 37 to 42 weeks, we know that's considered normal. So that is really, really interesting. And being due or overdue. And I guess if something's overdue, then you've missed the boat. That's so interesting, that lexicon that you're right, that we've all absorbed as a society, not necessarily in medical, but just everywhere has kind of gone with that. I mean, there's so much about language that just needs to change. And I almost think, I don't even know where to start.
Where would you start? If you could take one phrase just out of birth and birthing and pregnancy, what would your campaign be to get a word removed?
I really hate when midwives or doctors say that they delivered the baby. The mum delivered the baby. We helped support the birth. That would be my number one.
I've never thought of that.
Yeah. You deliver a pizza, you don't deliver a baby.
And yet that's completely normalised, isn't it, that word?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you look on like anything medical, we'd write, so if you had a vaginal birth, we'd write like SVD, so like standard vaginal delivery or spontaneous vaginal delivery, rather than like spontaneous vaginal birth. I find delivery quite problematic. And when I gave birth to Cecil and Wilfred, I delivered them. So I gave birth to them. No one else touched them. I was the one that brought them into the world. The midwife, she just stood at the end of the bed and was there. I was the one that gave birth to them. No one else touched them until I had done that. So very much I felt ownership of that. And not that these midwives did say that, but the concept that someone else delivered them, no, they did not. I delivered them.
Yeah. And I think language is so important, isn't it? Because language is the lens with which we view the world. And I think about this a lot, and I've done some amazing episodes in it. It's so hard if we start our motherhood experience feeling like our power's been taken away, if we start feeling disempowered. And that's, unfortunately, seems to me, you'll have a way better view than me, it seems to be quite normal that that's how women begin their motherhood. What do you see? You know, you are in this. This is your world. It's your passion. You've written a book about it. Do you see that? So many women starting feeling like they've had their power taken away through that pregnancy and birthing experience.
Yes, I do, which is really sad because I think we live in a society which is, we practice quite defensively, I think, in the UK, and rightly or wrongly. And also there is a lot of medical intervention. And then you've got kind of your guidelines as well. And then you've got people's anecdotal experiences. And it's so hard to know who to trust. And really, you should be hopefully getting your evidence-based information from your practitioner, whether that's your doctor or your midwife. But actually, there's so many other things in play, and that statistics don't necessarily reflect your individual experiences, and people aren't necessarily empowered to go away and look in the right places for their research, and appointments are short, and people run late, and you might not have the time that you need to explore the best options for you. It's such a minefield because the system is so stretched. And I truly believe that midwives and doctors don't mean any harm at all, and they are doing the best that they can in such a challenging environment. But we know that it's so hard to accommodate the needs of everyone in a service which has been underfunded for many years.
And when you see those mothers who come into the hospital and they seem to be more empowered, more confident, or able to advocate for themselves, what do you think the difference is there? Do you think it's education? Do you think it's personality? And how can more women leave that hospital feeling like the birth didn't go exactly how I wanted, because I'm not sure many do, but I feel okay about it?
I think education is key because, as you rightly said, we can't plan birth because we just don't know what's going to happen. And for the best will in the world, we could write an amazing kind of birth scenario, birth options, but actually sometimes things crop up during a labour that we just can't predict. But I think education is key because if you can understand why something happened, it's much easier to process it, isn't it? So if you understood, for example, that your baby wasn't in the optimal position for birth, and actually that was why the labour was slightly longer, or if you could understand that for these X, Y, and Z reason, we're recommending that you have an induction or whatever it is. If you understand the reasons behind it, then you can A, challenge it. If you don't feel that you agree, you can research it, but then you can also process it as well. Whereas if you're in a very stressful environment, for example, if you're in labor, that's not really the time to be doing your research, is it? You need to have done it beforehand. And antenatal education, I think, is incredible. It's so incredible. But again, there's not really any standards because you've got a lot of private companies sharing information. Then you've got NHS, and not all NHS hospitals even provide antenatal education anymore. So it's a real mismatch of your postcode, what you can afford. You might not be able to afford private antenatal classes. You might not have access to NHS classes in your area. So it's such a lottery of what your education might be. And yeah, you're right. Education is one of the key things that can help women, I think. And I do think that tends to be the women who are slightly older that might A, have the resources to invest in their education, but also understand the importance of it. And that's not to say that all very young women are like that. Some are very passionate about education, but just on the whole, I think the trend is that slightly older women will invest that because they understand the importance of it.
Well, it makes sense, doesn't it? If you've seen more of your friends go through birth and postnatal, whatever their experience, it's going to make you think about yours. Whereas I imagine if you were very young in the first, you know, you wouldn't have that to reflect on. I wanted to talk to you about how to support people in our lives who are going through loss, miscarriage, or IVF, because I think it's so easy to say the wrong thing. I know that I've experienced this. When I so want to say the right thing, that's often when I end up saying the wrong thing. The pressure to try and make someone feel seen or feel loved can sometimes make us do the opposite of what we want to do. And I was wondering, what are some of the things that we shouldn't say or can be harmful or triggering? And what are some of the things that do feel really supportive and loving for people going through some of what you went through?
So firstly, absolutely no shaming here. So I'm not shaming anyone if you have said some of these things, because I'm 100% guilty of saying some of them. So the examples I'm going to tell you are all things that I have probably said to someone. So don't feel bad if you've said some of these things to your friends. But firstly, just get rid of the word just. That is a terrible word. So just relax. That is one of the worst things that you can say to someone who is trying to have a baby. It really kind of belittles the experience, because probably were relaxed when you were first trying for a baby. And as the months have gone on, you're not getting pregnant because you weren't relaxed enough. Now, if we look at this in a really kind of scientific way, women conceive babies in extremely stressful environments, in war zones, in famines, in droughts. And so the body is under huge amounts of stress at that time. So you being stressed at your job is not the reason that you're not having a baby. So trying to imply that someone's not relaxed enough to have a baby is not helpful. I've definitely said that to people, so please don't feel guilty if you've said that. Also, things like just adopt, not helpful. That I find quite challenging, because the adoption process isn't easy. So being like just adopt makes it seem like, oh, I can just go and get a baby. That's not how that works. That's not helpful for people who have adopted. I find that's probably quite offensive to their experience of having to go through a very long adoption process to get their children. But also, wanting a biological child is not wrong. So wanting to have a baby, to experience pregnancy, that's not wrong. So there's nothing wrong with exploring your options for having a baby, whether that is IVF. Adoption is a fantastic way to have a family. Of course it is. But it's not only for people who can't have biological children. Families who have got their own biological children can absolutely adopt. And so I feel like the narrative of just adopt is a bit like saying, well, oh, you know, just go and choose a baby. And that's just not the reality of it. And a few other phrases that I think are really unhelpful in terms of loss is, well, anything with the phrase at least. So at least it was early. That's not helpful. You can try again. At least, at least, at least. I just feel they really lack the insight of the lived experience. And again, I'm guilty of saying all of these things. And it's when you understand why they're hurtful that you know not to do them again. So things that you can do, which would be really supportive, is acknowledging the situation. So that's really terrible, or that's really hard for you. I'm really sorry that that's happened to you. I just feel like the acknowledgement is sometimes all you need to say. With loss, I think, again, all of this is really individualized, so people feel differently. But because I did have a bit of a later loss, and my children have names, Cecil and Wilfred, I like to think of them as people. They are people. And so that for me is important, acknowledging that I had two children and they died, rather than thinking of it as like a loss or a heavy period, which I think is what sometimes people think happens. And so that for me is really important, but that might not be the right thing for other people. But just acknowledging that it was a baby can sometimes be so helpful, because it's not just a bundle of cells. Because as soon as you see those two pink lines, it's a baby to you, isn't it? So once that baby's gone, it wasn't just the two pink lines have gone. It's everything that you dreamed. It was the birth. It was the breastfeeding. It was the first day at school. It's a whole lifetime of things that's gone. It's not just the pink lines faded. So I think just acknowledging that, but also asking. So sometimes if you don't know how someone is feeling about it, just say, look, I really understand you're going through a very difficult time at the moment. Do you want to talk about it? Is there something that you don't want to talk about? Just being really open and honest. And again, I'm not saying any of this to shame anyone. And there isn't really a right thing to do, but I think just try and be open and support in the best way that you know possible.